and they walked away from that entirely. And
it
just seems so sad.
That is why a lot of people are hesitant to implement, is that it's different. It's going to take, depending on how you accept the data, it's going to take upgrading.
Hey, this is Forrest with the Concrete Conversations podcast. If you notice, Arian Sim is not joining me. She's in the doghouse for that one. She's going to sleep on the couch. No, she won't. No, she won't. I might sleep on the couch for making a joke about it. But anyway, but the point is she's not here, and that's okay. We forgive her. We're forgiving. It's not even something I have to forgive. Let's just move on. All right, so we have Matt Bird, who is on the episode today. Phenomenal dude. So Matt is three things. You ought to know all three of them. One, he's an awesome guy. Two, he's a really cool guy. Three, he's the chief cook and bottle washer behind the Reality Capture Network. Reality Capture Network is this awesome conference that's held in Boise. We talk a lot about that. We talk about the importance of education in learning how to do laser scanning and how to capture reality and put that into a digital format. What reality capture really is, we talk about some of his really cool jobs that he's done with laser scanning, just a wealth of information, and frankly, a magnanimous guy, just wants to help out the industry, and he's in a point in his career where he really can. And we have a really great and interesting conversation. You'll enjoy this one. Well, let's just jump right into it. Matthew, what is the most interesting laser scanning project that you have ever been on? I'm sure you've got them categorized from like, or, you know, classified 1 to 10. We don't care about 10. We want to go right to number 1.
Oh, man. That really is a good question. There's a couple that come to mind. There's too many. The first one I think of is actually a abandoned gold mine that we did in California. It was about a mile long underground tunnel that was a gold mine back in the 1800s. Some private owner had this mine, and they were starting to look at re-mining it. And in order to kind of help the process, they wanted to map out where it was, you know, underground compared to above ground. They were looking at new ways to get in, and it was not, I wouldn't say it was probably the OSHA safe environment. So it really felt adventurous. We took some scanners down there, and it was me and one of my guys, and we were literally crawling at times over piles of material through this mine, and there was old mine carts and stuff like that. That was a very unique job. I don't know, for those that have never been underground that far into the earth, it was a very different experience and feeling, especially knowing that it was not like some tour place where there's all these exits and, you know, lit signs and stuff. This was a tunnel with no lights, with no secondary exit. So when you got a mile into underground in this privately owned tunnel, there was this feeling of like,
there's only one way out of here.
We could get trapped in here.
Yeah.
So I felt kind of like Indiana Jones. So maybe not the most amazing site as far as the project goes, but it was definitely a unique one. So I could give more, but that's the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you have any supplementary air or anything like that? Or is this really like Wild West? We're probably beyond the, any kind of legal action. What is that called? What is that
time term? Frame to get in trouble? Yeah.
Yeah. The term for that? I don't remember the term for that. But yeah, the statute of limitations. We're beyond the statute of limitations.
Yes.
OSHA's not going to fine you. So how sketchy was that really? Because I can imagine.
That being said, looking back, it was very sketchy. And I'll tell you, as an entrepreneur, there are times that you make quick decisions and you just do things. And sometimes you look back and you're like, maybe that wasn't the wisest choice. Maybe that wasn't the safest choice. Maybe that was this would be one of those. Going into this mine, there were literally again, who knows how old, there were wooden beams but across this tunnel that literally said danger on it. Things like that, that we're just walking past, and we're crawling over piles of things that have fallen before. And we're literally going through spaces that you had to crawl between and like pass the tripod to each other. So probably shouldn't have done it. All we had was lamps, lights, you know, no cell service, no extra oxygen. So note to anybody else who takes on these wild adventures, think through those things.
So it's funny you bring that up, because I have a company where we do, among other things, we utilize ground penetrating radar to find stuff underground. And everybody who's been utilizing ground penetrating radar for very long at all has some story about, like, some treasure hunting story, because there's always going to be some guy who says, hey, I found out where the Spanish hid their gold, or, you know, there's some Portuguese wreck or something, and they think that, first of all, they think that ground penetrating radar is just a magical box that can just find anything. You know, hey, it's offshore, you know, in 50 feet of water, not a lake or something, but, you know, 50 feet of ocean water, and ground penetrating radar can see that, right? And there's just so many misconceptions about what it can find, first of all, and then people also. In fact, I've got a customer right now. Every time that he talks to me about using GPR, he always calls it LIDAR. And he always says, so you're going to come out with your LIDAR and find the pipes underground? I say, well, no, I mean, yes. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Let's just move on.
We will tell you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of... you know, this is why I love talking about technology a lot, because there's a lot of amazing technology that has come out that has expanded over the last 10 years. And yet there's such a lack of understanding, a lack of education, a lack of resources to learn about them that all kinds of things get confused when you start talking about drones and photogrammetry and LIDAR and X-ray. And, you know, so I enjoy the fact that through even this podcast, we can try to help some people understand things like that a little better.
And the root of it all is TV shows like NCIS and CIS, who always do ridiculous things with ground penetrating radar and all this other stuff to show that, like, yeah, it's basically magic. But the treasure hunting guys, they'll call up, and first of all, as I said, they think that GPR is just magic and it'll just find anything underground, just whatever. And it'll, like, you know, when you push it over and find some gold, then it'll start beeping at you like, gold here, gold here. But then also, they want to have some pretty sketchy terms, which is that I'll give you 1% of whatever I find. And it seems like it's always something along those lines. And I'm like, dude, you don't have to give me a percent of anything you find, but I need a check before I walk away. I need to get some payment here, because I'm not down with the whole, like, hey, let's go in on this together thing. I'm running a business. I'm not running a thrill-seeking adventure thing. So with that, maybe overly personal question, were you paid in American dollars, or were you paid in a percent of whatever the yield was of that future gold mine?
I was paid in fun and adventure. No, I.
So you're paid in neither. That's even worse.
No, I was paid in American U.S. dollars for that project. Correct. Yes. Now here is something that I still like. Which this leads back to some of the fun of, you know, being in a role where you get to make those decisions. I have definitely taken on certain fun projects at lower pay because I wanted to do them. So that adventure piece is still there, where it's like, this is a new challenge. I'm trying to help solve a problem I've never done before. I want to do this. I want to see how it works. I want to experience that, you know? So I've definitely done that at times.
Yeah. Well, and that's the fun part about being an entrepreneur, is that you're able to just decide, like, you know what, things are going pretty well. This is a good quarter. And I'm just going to take on some project that maybe, you know, when I was in my first 6 months, I wouldn't have touched with a 10-foot pole. But now things are going well, like, hey, maybe. And that's a great thing.
I will say that is part of what had me start my business in the first place, is that over a couple year time span of getting into scanning and starting to talk with people in different industries, I have worked on almost any type of project you can think of, from you know, massive crime scenes with law enforcement to fishing vessels in Alaska to underground gold mines to high rises in New York to airports, oil and gas, nuclear facilities. Almost every type of project I have touched or helped with, which is what made me go, I want the flexibility. Now that I'm seeing the value of these technologies in so many different use cases, I want the flexibility to be able to say, yes, I want to go try to help solve this problem. I want to look deeper into this. I want to help more industries and more companies understand the value of the tools and help them learn how to implement them, because I saw such a vast need in the fact that it can solve problems for so many different types of people and jobs.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a really fun thing about starting your own business. There are many, you know, there's a lot of baggage that comes with starting your own business, but the flexibility of it and just the adventure of the whole thing is pretty fun. That's pretty, it's kind of addicting. I have a hard time imagining going back to work for somebody else after having done this, which is not everybody's experience. I've got a good friend of mine, very close friend, and he was a CFO for a couple of companies, and then he left, started his own business in the same industry, grew it, sold it, was doing really well with did really well with the sale of it. With the sale, and then he started his own another company, and he's doing well there. But he said, you know, I'm just kind of getting burned out of this whole thing. I'd kind of like to have a 9-to-5 thing again, and be able to just, you know, have my evenings all the time, always have my weekends. He said, after I sell this company, I'm probably just going to get a job and just, you know, not have as many responsibilities, not be the chief cook and bottle washer. And there's some appeal to that. When I see the like now hiring sign at Home Depot, there's a part of me that says, man, when you clock out, they never call you. They never ask you to come in like, hey, some customer needs something urgently. Be like, well, isn't Jake in plumbing right now? Can't he do that? You know, can't he take care of that one?
No. Jake is at State Farm. He doesn't work in plumbing anymore. This is a fun topic. I love talking about this too, as an entrepreneur, business owner, you know, growing, and you end up having those conversations of people that are like, I think I want to quit my job and start a business. And, you know, there are multiple times that I almost quit, that I tried to just offer my business to merge into a company. It gets hard, and there's a lot of unknowns when you get into business. Running a business is very different than just getting to enjoy your craft. And that is the thing that if you, there's a couple books, you know, E-Myth is one that's fun. Most people who decide to start a business, they try to start a business because they love doing a thing. When you start growing a business, you realize that you get into juggling business, finances, accounting, payroll, employees, whatever that looks like, that you don't even get to do the thing you love anymore. So, as much as I love running a business, and I do try to tell people, look, just because it worked for me or I'm doing it, not everybody is meant to run a business. There is still very exciting roles you can have, being a number two or three or four or five. Like, depending on what you love doing and what you want to do, you know, there's a lot to weigh. Business ownership is not just fun and games. Like a lot of us think it is before we get into it. A lot of people stepping into entrepreneurship have this idea that, oh, I just get to pick my schedule and everything's easy. Sometimes you learn the hard way.
I mean, there's going to be a day when I sell a business, and then I, uh, And I just, the next day or the next month, I walk into Home Depot and say, hey, I'll work for like 10 bucks an hour. Can I work in the building materials department? I'll just, if my job is just to like move lumber around, sort 2x4s, you know, use the panel saw to cut some sheet goods every once in a while. I just get to smell wood all day and move it around. I'll do that for 10 or 12 bucks an hour, like all day long, man. You just let me know when you've got an opening. That day will come. That day will definitely come. But for right now, that's not a great fit because 10 or 12 bucks an hour is not going to provide for a family of six very well, especially not in Southern California. So that's not on the near horizon for me. And Matt, you've got a family. What has it been like being a, man, there's so much that comes with being an entrepreneur. There's the flexibility that comes eventually, but that doesn't come right away. Right away comes the intense hours and the crazy unforeseeable schedule. Like, honey, we just had a job come in, or they want a proposal tonight. I got to skip dinner. I've got to write this proposal, and I'm probably going to be gone all next week. Well, Jill is on the honor roll. She was going to be recognized next week. Well, I mean, I kind of need to make some money for the fam. This is tough. What has this been like for you and your family?
It is. You know, the earlier years were a lot harder. So I started my first business 8 years ago. And when I started, I knew nothing about business. I had no savings. I started with passion. That was about it. Me, a laptop, and my home office. And when I first got started, I was traveling to projects, doing scanning. I was supporting companies. And when you are an entrepreneur and you have a job to do, you're doing the job. If you want to eat, if you want to pay your bills. And so those early years were a lot of extra hours trying to get off the ground and figure out what the heck I was doing. And, you know, when there was a job, I was traveling. It was difficult. I think for me, it's trying to be very intentional and present with whatever you're doing and putting a lot into it. If you're home and if you're spending time with the family, like, try to unplug, try to not be on your phone all the time. And even that has been a battle, right? Because I have clients that have immediate needs. And in those early days, it's like you have to be the one answering the phone. And if you want to grow, you need to be known for being responsive and supportive and there when your clients need you. So the early years, there was a lot more of that. Over the last 8 years, we grew Nexus 3D to be about 16 or 18 employees. You know, we were able to get to the point that I wasn't the one traveling to every job, and I had some other people that were taking, you know, calls and emails. And yet, I still work more hours than anybody because I have a vision I'm building toward. But what I try to do for me, I try to sacrifice some of my personal time. You know, I always go home at the same time. You know, I leave at 4:30 p.m. But instead of starting my day at 8 or 9 a.m., I'm starting at 4 a.m. You know, I try to balance the time that I have without, you know, sacrificing family time, but still putting in the extra work because of that's your job. As the owner, as the one that now has not just a family to support, but employees and employees' families, and you're always driving that ship. And just recently, I actually announced the acquisition of Nexus 3D Consulting, and I now have a role where I am still helping grow and support a services business, but I've gotten to now shift and put a focus on Reality Capture Network as well, which is something that I've become very passionate about, building a community, trying to build education content. So, you know, it's really hard to limit yourself when you become so passionate about what you do and why you're doing it.
That's really fantastic. And, you know, everybody should make sure to follow Matt Bird, and follow the Reality Capture Network. I attended the Reality Capture Network for the first time in Boise this last year. It was fantastic. You know, everybody reach out to Matt he's very, very good about just supporting the industry, and he's really fantastic about that. And then, of course, follow and subscribe with Concrete Conversations so we can keep getting fantastic guests like Matt to come on board here. So glad to have you here, Matt. And so tell me more about, tell me more about the Reality Capture Network. This is a conference. What else is it?
Yeah, so the short story, you know, over the last 13 years or so, however long it's been that I got into scanning, and then I found, you know, more like trying to dig into 3D modeling and then virtual reality and how to use drones. And I started getting into all these technologies and realized like everybody's out there running into the same problems, running into the same headaches, asking the same questions, and there's not been a lot of good resources available to help people learn about them, how to implement them, the benefits, which type of hardware should we use for what type of job. All of that led to 3 years ago starting a podcast. So Reality Capture Network started as a podcast to have conversations, to share those conversations with a bigger audience. And after starting the podcast, deciding, you know, I have a pretty big following on LinkedIn. I've always done a lot of networking, going to events. I have a lot of relationships. And I asked the question, how could I impact the industry better or in a bigger way than just me doing scanning services? And that led to this idea of Reality Capture Network not just being a podcast, but really growing to be a community that listens to the podcast, that jumps on and talks and shares information on there, yes, but then also gets together in person at our annual conference and listens to presentations and gets hands-on with technology. And the other big one is actually building relationships with people in the industry, because that has been a crucial piece for me in the types of projects you work on. There are so many different tools. There's so many different workflows. There's so many different specialties that there's no one company who can solve all the problems. And so collaboration, I think, is a huge piece in order to help scale the growth of these technologies in whole, is knowing if I get a request for a underground, you know, utility locate, or I get a request for a digital twin project on an airport, or a scan job in a gold mine, or a what technology should be used, or who could I collaborate on with that, or who do I refer to? So it really has grown to awareness building through media, but also relationship building, and then getting into further with education content. We plan to actually have training material and courses and in-person boot camps where we actually teach people how to use different hardware, because we're getting to the point in the industry that a lot of companies are realizing the need for these technologies, but there's not enough people that know how to do it to hire. They don't know where to send people to train if they hire them. So we're trying to help solve some of the resource issues.
That's fantastic. You know, I think there's a real need for that in the industry. It's one thing to recognize that a technology or a hardware or software needs to be used and what its capabilities are. And it's a whole other thing to be able to proficiently utilize those hardwares and softwares. So I think that's fantastic. In fact, a podcast episode I did with the Drone U with Rob and Paul from the Drone U a while ago, they were talking about that exact same thing, that Paul always relates it to having a driver's license. Just because you have a driver's license doesn't mean that you know how to drive well. That just means that the government is okay with you driving on the road. And that's it. And anybody who's driven for very long knows that there are plenty of people on the road with driver's licenses who we all wish weren't on the road. And that's a thing. And so you have to have that. So the need for that training component is very real.
Yeah. And part of why I'm looking at creating it is because I get asked about it so much. I have companies reach out to me all the time that, okay, somebody convinced them to buy a scanner and now they have this scanner and they go to apply it on a job and they're messing up and they don't know why and they don't know if it's the right scanner. They don't know the process to integrate control. They don't know if it's accurate enough for the type of job they're doing. There's all these things that that are more complex than they're being made out to be, and people don't know until they run into the problem. So my goal now is saying, I see this problem happen enough I need to build proactive training to help people understand the workflows and the types of gear and everything up front instead of causing the problems and then trying to fix them. Because what that does, it gives a bad taste in the mouth to the client. The project's late. People don't trust the technology anymore. If we as a community can highlight these problems and proactively help everybody avoid them, it actually helps the industry and the demand for the need, you know, services and the technology grow exponentially. So it creates more business for everybody. And I know it's cliche, but it's why I say my goal right now is like rising the tide that lifts all boats, right? Everybody else is trying to do the service, but they have the problem. And I want to help everybody do work better just to help the industry grow.
Yeah. You know, in ground penetrating radar, there are so many similarities here. With ground penetrating radar, there's a real issue there too. And it's my experience, you know, I offer some laser scanning services. I'm very new into this. I haven't been doing it for very long. In fact, right up here, you can see my BLK 360, and then we've got an Elios 3 right there, which are fantastic. But, you know, that is my laser scanning fleet. Whenever I have to go outside of that, I just have to rent the equipment. And it has been, I have a couple of sources who are immensely helpful for ensuring that I'm going about these projects the right way. But every single project, I have to consult with them, and not everybody has found some, you know, really great helpful resources to help them, you know, help hold their hand through this. And that's been my experience with LiDAR, and it's certainly the case with GPR. With GPR, you can buy a piece of equipment and get the manufacturer's training. And the manufacturers, look, their job is to build the piece of equipment and give you some training on what button does what, but they're not there any more than Honda or Toyota or Ford or Chevrolet is there to teach you to be a great driver. They're there to show you, you know, sell you the equipment, make sure you know where the buttons are, but that's kind of where that relationship kind of ends. And there needs to be somebody else to step in to fill that void.
Yeah, that is the problem, is that all of the training thus far has been limited from the people selling the gear. And there's some one-off people out there that have done some more training, and but the industry in whole is getting to a point, there's such a massive amount of people starting to adopt these technologies that there needs to be more resources, more training, more guidelines, more best practices. There's a lot missing. That, you know, again, there's no driving school. There's the people selling the cars, and then you're like, everybody buy a car and go drive on the freeway. what's the blinker for? Which way do I press it? Like, where's my windshield wiper? Like, there's so much missing, you know, and again, it's cool. I love the shift for me focus-wise, because as much as I love scanning, I've been doing it for years personally. I love doing it. I love the technology. And I love helping solve problems on projects. But now, with the shift of me trying to help businesses fix their problems, the personal joy I get out of companies being able to use the tools they've spent all this money on and actually satisfy clients and satisfy projects, it's very rewarding to get messages from people saying, like, what you did changed, you know, the game for us. We understand the process now, or our projects are working, or that feedback that the content or the value we're providing to people is really changing, you know, the way they do things. It's, I love that focus personally.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I've noticed this exact same need in ground penetrating radar, in kind of the GPR industry, if you want to call it that, with the ground penetrating radar technology. I noticed this a while ago, and I've done a little bit of training for other companies, and it is very, two things coming out of that. One, just the intense need there, that there are way more people buying ground penetrating radar antennas of all sorts than there are competent users of that technology. And then also, just that it's a lot of fun. It's so fun to, I love teaching. I love being in front of a group and helping to connect people who want to learn and the information that they need, and just seeing that light turn on in their eyes. It's a lot of fun. Very, very rewarding. It's pretty cool stuff. So I think that's neat. The reality capture, so that term reality capture, that's kind of vague, right? So reality capture, when I first heard that term, I always heard that in relation to LIDAR, right? LIDAR stands for light, distance, and ranging. What does LIDAR stand for? Let's hear that from you.
See, now you're going to put me on the spot.
Light, distance, laser. Let's just say LIDAR. Anyway, LIDAR is good stuff. So we're going to have to look that up. I'm going to have to look that up
light
later.
Light detection and ranging.
There yes. it is. Light detection.
You were on the right
ranging.
Path. Yeah. It's light detection and ranging.
So yeah. I always heard reality capture used in relation to light detection and ranging, LIDAR, laser scanning. What else is reality capture?
That's a great question. I would pose the question, who owns the term reality capture and what does it mean? So I think I first started hearing reality capture personally several years ago. And I feel like when I first started hearing it, it was kind of through the Autodesk circle. They came out with Recap and they started using point clouds, and I kind of started hearing the term. And I agree that it used to be kind of specific to laser scanning. Typically, if someone said reality capture, it was kind of like, okay, laser scanning and data to capture on site. And I feel like it started to shift. And we personally, it's in our name, Reality Capture Network, we have this conversation too of what all technologies or processes actually fall within reality capture. To us, we're defining what we focus on, what we want to educate on, what tools we want to tell people about. And we really say it's anything to do with capturing existing conditions or capturing information from a site and bringing it back to utilize, you know, digitally. So a camera is capturing reality in a certain way. A LIDAR sensor is, a GPR, an X-ray, anything like that could fall within reality capture. Anything that is capturing information from the job site could technically fall within the term reality capture.
So at the Reality Capture Network, there was still, conference that I attended, it was still very heavy on laser scanning. Do you have any kind of intentional push to guide the conversations at the conference in one particular way or another? Or is it just kind of, is it fairly free form in terms of whatever people are talking about in the industry that falls under the general heading of reality capture, we're willing to talk about?
Yes, that. My goal is being on top of all of the technologies that exist that can help people improve the built environment, improve, you know, construction jobs, improve building digital assets, like anything to do with that. So for us, are the technologies we focus on and will focus on as we continue forward with education content, with conferences, with speaking, are survey gear, laser scanning gear, drone gear, X-ray gear, robotics, AI. How can any new technology be integrated into our industries that, you know, the community overall we focus on? How can they be pulled in and how could they be adopted? So we likely will even expand into some things that aren't even actually reality capture, such as AI. Is AI reality capture? No. Is robotics reality capture? No. But can they play a role in reality capture? Yes. So for me, I want to focus on all new technologies. And when we talk about things like GPR, I think that absolutely is reality capture. That is a sensor. And we see a lot of clients and a lot of project types where they are now interested in all the above. If you can establish control on a site and do underground locate to find pipes and do above ground scans and then do drone work and have this starts leading me to the conversation of like, what is the future of digital twins for asset owners? If someone owns a facility, which we work in, and they have underground material and they have above ground piping and structure, and they start to see the value in having a digital copy of their physical assets, you're going to need all of those technologies. And you need to understand how to integrate them all properly and pull the data together from them and put them into a system that will work for, you know, solving the problems they're trying to solve. So I believe all of those are things that we will continue to focus on.
That's fantastic. So, and really comprehensive. That's really, I think, a great asset to construction industry in general, to just to be able to have a resource like the Reality Capture Network that is so so inclusive of helpful technologies that can push a project forward. Yeah,
and part of why I think that's important is I believe there are some resources out there that go into one of the topics, right? Like you can find information on survey practices, you can find some information on drones, but now you see a lot of need for mixing the technologies, and there's not a lot of resources that help educate whether a user or whether an owner. Okay, let's take it to the owner's perspective. What if the owner now sees the vision for, I want this implemented on my facilities? How do they know where to start? What do they even ask for in an RFP? What gear should be used? How do they know how to vet who's going to come do the work? There's a lot missing in the overall ecosystem of how to combine these tools and the data into certain platforms. So I think that my hope is, we identify the gaps and we help solve some of those problems, but we also identify other organizations, other people doing education and training, and we pull those together so that as someone's looking at how do I solve some of these problems in the ecosystem, if it's not something we're building and educating on, we then have the partners to push them to, instead of everyone just having to Google themselves to death and find all kinds of different resources.
Right. You know, and it's interesting you're bringing this up. This, like right now, this very minute, I've got a crew on a project where they're using ground penetrating radar and sewer cameras for some locating inside of a structure. We've got like a ground in the ground level to find pipes underground there. And then afterwards, I'm going to be going out and I'll be using the Elios 3. To do some confined space laser scanning and thermal imaging, as well as the using the HD camera on there. And then I'm also be using the BLK360 to kind of capture and create a digital twin of this space. But, you know, I'm going to be using terrestrial laser scanning, a drone, and, you know, SLAM laser scanning, as well as, you know, we're using 4 or 5 different technologies on this project. And it's great because this customer didn't understand, first of all, that all these things exist, and certainly not that you could put these things all together to come up with a really comprehensive deliverable, and it's really enjoyable to be able to show the customer, how much technology there is out there right now that can be utilized to generate a level of deliverable that just didn't exist, and certainly didn't exist affordably a decade ago. And it's really fun. It's really very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many levels to any one of these technologies where one, it may be replacing an older workflow. So a super simple example would be using a laser scanner in a building to capture an as-built instead of somebody going out there with a tape measure and a pencil and a notepad. It is replacing the old workflow, but also it's creating data that was never before possible. It's giving you the imagery. It's giving you data on the floor if you need a floor flatness report. It's giving you the measurements on the ceiling if you need a reflective ceiling plan. It gives you, you know, data that could be used for a safety video of paths. You could use it for signage. You know, there's so many other things. One of the best ways for companies who haven't adopted technologies like that is to evaluate what data comes out of it and how many different departments could solve a problem using the same data as opposed to only replacing one old workflow.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Everybody make sure to follow Matt Bird. He's got a lot of really, really interesting things that he always talks about and very relevant to today. We've talked a lot about the construction industry. Where is that where you're seeing the most growth in laser scanning in particular? Is in construction, or is there much in real estate or somewhere else? Where's the most growth for this technology?
I do believe that right now construction is kind of number one, but that is construction across all industries. So oil and gas facilities, any type of food processing plant, warehouse, home renovations. So when I say construction, it's anybody who's building or renovating or expanding. And that's a very, very big and broad focus. So I do think that that is kind of number one, because they all have the same problem in that they are building, they're renovating spaces, they're expanding spaces, they're reusing spaces, and nobody has accurate information of what exists. That's why it's such a big focus there for all types of reality capture, whether it's capturing existing spaces to then design on if it's a renovation, or it's scanning during construction to confirm that things are being built to the design, or it's scanning after now so that owner has an actual as-built. Those, I think, are some of the easiest, biggest reasons that scanning is growing. That being said, it's also growing across a lot of other industries. Movie sets, entertainment, every single movie and commercial has LiDAR done on it. They use it to scan scenes. They use it to scan props. They use it to then pull individual effects. Crime scenes, police departments, car accidents. It really is growing across all industries.
Where do you see, is there any industry where you see resistance to adopting laser scanning, where you think that you believe there's some real potential there, but just for whatever reason, there's resistance to adoption?
You know, I'm sure there is, but the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is all of them. I believe that any of the resistance that exists today against something like scanning or other forms of reality capture is only due to, one, a lack of knowledge of the process, what it's going to cost, and the outcome, the lack of the ROI, or the resistance or fear to change in general. That's something, you know, when we talk about innovation and people getting used to workflows, they're afraid of disruption. The larger the company, the harder it is to change. I believe those are the reasons that certain people are resistant to the technology without knowing it in depth. If you ask someone right now who doesn't have an in-depth knowledge of these technologies, if you say, hey, you're out there using a tape measure, what if we start scanning? The reason they're initially hesitant or resistant is, one, they assume it's going to be super expensive because it's some new fancy technology. And two, they're like, man, I'm going to have to learn a new software. I'm going to have to learn a new process. There's all these other reasons. And that's why I'm focused so much on content and proactively building education content that answers some of those questions. Because as soon as, again, I go back to using an architectural example. If you take an architect who uses a tape measure and goes out and measures a building, if you ask them about scanning, they're going to assume it's too expensive. But if you go back and ask the question, well, what do you do if you don't scan? They're like, well, I go out to the job site for a week and I'm pulling measurements, and then I mess up the measurements and I have to go back three times. If you compare that to the cost of scanning, scanning is cheaper, it's faster, it's a better deliverable. So it really comes down to the lack of knowledge, really. They need to be educated on the process, why they would do it. And then some of them just need that hand-holding and that boosting of like, how am I going to use the data? How do I actually integrate this into my workflow? I believe that's the main reason that anybody would be hesitant, is just the lack of knowledge and the hesitancy to change process in general.
You know, I was talking to a friend the other day, and he works, he's a distributor for a number of different types of tools and, you know, reseller and stuff. And laser scanning was one that that his company was trying to sell to a particular set of customers. And these customers have, you know, industrial facilities, manufacturing facilities, things like that, big warehouses with a lot of pipes, a lot of complex geometry. And so they were looking into them using laser scanning for developing as-builts for their facilities, but they just didn't know what to do with it. And the data, the file sizes were too large. It kept crashing their laptops. And so they walked away from it. They said, this is too weird and it's too big. We don't even know what to do with file sizes like this. Let's just walk away. And they walked away from that entirely. Yeah. And it just seems so sad.
And that is why that is why a lot of people are hesitant to implement, is that it's different. It's going to take depending on how you accept the data, it's going to take upgrading your computers. It's going to create, you know, a need for a different type of software. And that is one of the reasons that the majority of projects that we end up getting asked to do scanning on, we also get asked to create a model or create a CAD drawing. Or the majority of companies today are not ready for you to go scan and hand them the default data type, which is big, massive point clouds that nobody knows how to use. So first is like, how can we help people who could use the benefits of scanning, but deliver it in a way that they're already familiar with or used to? So creating deliverables from scan data, and that goes for terrestrial scan, mobile scan, aerial scan, the need to create deliverables from point clouds is actually a big opportunity. There's a lot of work that needs to be done there.
You know, Matt, a lot of the focus of our podcast here is on young professionals getting into the industry, generally speaking, the construction industry, but in this case, with our conversation, laser scanning, reality capture in general, is that something that you would recommend? Is that what I'm hearing you say is that a firm that offers laser scanning doesn't offer nearly as much value if their plan is to deliver a point cloud, that they need to be able to offer more than just a point cloud to their customers, because so many of their customers aren't going to know what to do with that.
Yeah. So couple thought processes there. One is there is a lot that can be created from scan data. And some of those deliverables take different types of software, different skill sets, different training. So for example, if I was to say we're going to scan a building on a construction job that's going through a renovation, there's the knowledge that you need to have to capture the data, to register that data, to create an accurate point cloud and deliver that. But then there's a completely different set of software or skill set if you want to create a floor flatness report that they need for the concrete floor. There's a different process and software that's needed, a knowledge base, if you want to create a CAD drawing, if you want to create a Revit model, if you want to make a model of the MEP or versus the steel and architecture. Like, there are so many different deliverables you can create from data. The one thing I would caution people of is thinking that they can do all of it. It's very different skill sets, specialties, software types, training. I would say there's massive opportunity in both, though. A scanning company could be a really good scanning company and say, look, all we do is the capture, the process, get it to point cloud, and then hand it off to a different company that does modeling or something. Or it could be the other way around. There are companies that exist that all they do is the modeling piece. They don't do the capture. Or you can pick and choose, but you do have to know it's going to be more cost, more investment, more software, more training if you want to do all the above. So that's from the business side, is consider that piece and kind of you have to pick what you want to do and know that there's going to be quite a few layers to it. Now, on the other side, though, of if somebody wants to, there's a young person looking for a career path, like, you know, that type of conversation, there is a lot of massive opportunity around all of these technologies, laser scanning, point cloud to model, all of that, because the need for these technologies is growing rapidly, which makes companies want to get into it. How do they get into it? Well, they either collaborate with a firm that already exists, or they try to build their own department. Who are they going to hire that already has all this experience? There's not a lot of resources because these are new. There's nobody coming out of school today that is already an expert in these. So everybody who's in it today has grown from on-the-job experience. So right now, there are survey companies, construction companies, engineering companies that are looking for ground-level laser scanning technicians, for example. Those people could come in, as long as they're hardworking, willing to learn, willing to travel, willing to go on a job site. You could get into scanning with zero experience, and over a couple years, you're now a veteran scanner for some of these firms who have zero experience. So there's a very good career path in laser scanning, in LiDAR, in BIM, in those that you don't necessarily already have to have experience in. And what happens if the industry continues to grow and adopt these over the next 10 years, if you get started now or in the next 2 years, you're going to be one of those people that could actually be a management level or a director or, you know, there is a lot of career opportunity in every direction with these technologies.
That's really exciting. It's really great to hear that news that there are entry level positions for such a hot growing industry as laser scanning. That's hopefully really good news for a lot of people. So thank you very much for sharing that. Matt, there is just so much more that I want to talk to you about. Time doesn't permit it today. I either need to be on your podcast sometime or we need to have you on here again, but I'd love to have more conversations with you. But had a fantastic time here. I hope everybody goes and checks out Matthew Bird on LinkedIn, follows the Reality Capture Network. If you're in Reality Capture, even kind of sort of roughly at all, you should go up to Boise and participate in the Reality Capture Network conference. Matt, when is that being held?
Yeah, first, again, I appreciate you having me on. I always love trying to talk or share or give anything I can that will help people learn and grow and provide some interest in these technologies. So thanks again. Our conference is October. It's in Boise at Boise State University. It is a great time if you're looking to learn about these tools, you know, scanners, drones, point clouds, XR stuff, and or network with companies and individuals that are in these technologies. We really do have a mix of people from users to those just looking to learn to end owners that are trying to understand the value. So we're always looking to build the community. But again, appreciate you having me on, and we will definitely have to follow up on some more conversations.
For sure. I don't know if there's I've been to Boise quite a few times, and I've never been there during a bad time of year, if that exists, but October is certainly not a bad time at all to visit Boise, Idaho. It's a beautiful, beautiful town, and the leaves are changing, and it's a great place to be. So when you go to the Reality Capture Network, extend your trip by a day or two. You won't regret it. So Matt, really want to thank you for being on. Let's have some more conversations, and everybody look him up, and thank you for following and tuning into Concrete Conversations podcast. We look forward to seeing you again soon.